This is episode 356, dated Friday, April 19th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
And welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. How are you doing this fine day? This is episode 356, dated Friday, April 19th, 2024. And with us today, Peter O'Toole, our good friend and colleague. Peter, what's going on?
It is a beautiful day in Coos Bay, Oregon. I think spring has finally arrived. And I think it's supposed to be nice weather now, essentially, between now and like October. And then the rainy season starts.
I hope you're right. I really, really do. You've had a lot of rain and damp weather all winter long. It's time that that changed. Before we continue, let me allow people who deserve thanks to be thanked for making sure that In Perspective is made available to the general public. We start out with Raymond Gay, our executive producer. Thank you for what you do. Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline. Thank you for posting our programs. Also, the media outlets, thank you for airing us when you do. It's much appreciated. And I want to thank Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions. She archives our shows on my website. To hear the archives, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you hit In Perspective Podcasts. Click on that, and you will hear most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to give a shout out to Steve, who has graciously decided to be our host for today's episode. Steve, thank you for taking the time to be with us today and to help us out. I also want to thank Herbie for streaming us on ACB Media 5 Clubhouse. Thank you for doing that. And because he does that, let me give out my email address for those people who have questions or comments about In Perspective. That is bobbranco93@gmail.com. bobbranco93@gmail.com. We are very pleased to have back with us again former New York Congressman John LaBoutelier. It's always a pleasure having him on, so we always try to get him back as often as possible to update us on some of what's going on, good and bad, pro and con. And Congressman, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you, Peter. Thanks, everybody. Love this hour whenever I'm on. I changed my old schedule around to be on this show. I love it. So thank you for having me.
We appreciate your support as always. Before you were introduced and before we started our program, you hinted around about some very important stuff that's going to be happening on Monday. So I thought we would start out there, because you intrigued us with some of the headlines that you alluded to. So what's going to happen on Monday, Congressman, that's pretty significant to politics?
Before you answer that, Congressman, we should say this is being recorded on Friday. What's today's date? April 19th,
which is the 19th. Anniversary of the beginning of the American Revolutionary War.
There you go.
So yeah, by the way, I want to tell a story about my life on April 19th at Harvard as an undergrad. It's a funny, interesting story for later on in the show. But anyway, so yeah, today's Friday. On Monday, the 22nd, 3 days from when we're taping this, the opening arguments are going to begin for Donald Trump's trial. And that means we're really underway in the first criminal trial of a former president. Okay. But it was just announced this afternoon that the Attorney General of New York State, Letitia James, who successfully sued Trump and the Trump Organization and the Trump kids for fraud and got a $454 million judgment. If you recall, this was all a couple months ago. And Trump appealed the bonding thing and got the appeals court to agree all he has to do to appeal the verdict is to put up a $175 million bond. He doesn't have to put up the $454 million. The court said, we'll give you a break, $175 million, in a bond, and then you can file your appeal. Well, Trump went out, found some guy in California named Don Hankey, who repossesses people's cars, and he put up the bond. He's not a bond guy here in New York. He's from California. But the attorney general has looked at it, and this afternoon at 4 o'clock, she filed papers saying she is rejecting this bond. It does not conform to New York state law, and she doesn't believe she could collect on it if Trump loses his appeal. So on Monday morning, there's a court hearing in a separate courtroom where they're going to go over this bond thing, and the judge might, at the moment of that hearing, reject the bond, in which case the attorney general can begin seizing Trump's assets up to almost $500 million. All on Monday. Criminal trial that threatens to put him in jail, and a hearing that threatens basically to bankrupt him.
Congressman, I'm curious on your take. I'm sure you've read that this trial that's about to start on Monday is sort of the weakest case against former President Trump. You know, it's sort of a, you know, some people think it's just misdemeanors, and it's sort of a fake case, to use Trumpology, Trumpanese. What is your take on this particular case?
Well, I don't think it's weak. I mean, I think it's very strong for a conviction. I think what people meant by that was, in the scope of important historical crimes, obviously trying to overthrow the government and have a president who's been defeated trying to stay in office, that's the biggest crime you could commit. I mean, it's treasonous, really. And so that, compared to paying off a couple of women before an election and burying it so no one will know about it, but it doesn't mean this case is a weak case. It's not weak at all. They've got total evidence and witnesses, documents, tapes. They've got Trump dead to rights on this thing. And when it was going on, I remember in late 2016, he's running against Hillary, and it came out at some point that he was, after the election, that he was paying Stormy Daniels. And I said to people right then, when you move money around, you run into all sorts of laws. You know, you run into tax laws, gift tax laws, banking laws, interstate commerce, is all this stuff. When you're using your own money, you figure you can do whatever you want. Well, you really can't, not when it's regulated. And business reporting is regulated, and federal campaigns are regulated. And so, in effect, what Trump was doing was he was putting several hundred thousand dollars of his own money into his campaign, but he never reported it. He hid it, and you can't do that. That's a felony. And that's why this case is not weak. It's actually quite strong. Plus, politically, it'll hurt him a lot when every day the people hear what really went on, and they hear the tape, and they hear all, it's not going to be good for him.
Yeah, no, I guess what I was, I agree that it's a strong case. I think what I've also heard is that New York State, this is one of these cases that would only work in a state like New York. You know, the laws are written in such a way that this case works in New York State. It wouldn't work, for example, in the state of, I don't know, you know, Idaho, you know, because the laws are different. The laws regulating businesses are different. As I understand, this is a state case, right? It's not a
correct.
It's being tried by the state attorney general, not the federal attorney.
No, it's the Manhattan district attorney.
It
is under state law. You're absolutely right. Although it has we don't know this for sure until Monday, but it has a unique feature, which is he's charged with 34 felonies, but most of them are misdemeanors that have been stepped up to felonies, because in New York state law, there's a provision that if you commit misdemeanors in support of a second crime, then those misdemeanors get elevated to felonies. And the second crime here, the first crime is moving the money around and hiding it in the business records of the Trump organization. Okay. That's a crime, but they're misdemeanors normally. But the second crime this was part of was the federal election law refusing not reporting correctly how much money he gave to his campaign. And all of this stuff he did to hide Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels and all was all clearly campaign related.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore he violated federal campaign laws. But maybe New York state law too.
How much of Donald Trump's assets are they allowed to confiscate legally if this all breaks out?
So that's back on the attorney general thing. He has been found liable of 354-ish million, and then they added, then it was all for crimes years ago, so there's $100 million interest on that, bringing it up to 454 million, and it's accruing interest on that at like something like $112,000 a day. But for the sake of our discussion, call it 454 million. And they, unless Trump can get a bond that's accepted, he can't appeal. And they can therefore start seizing his assets. The case is over. That's the whole point. You want to file an appeal in New York State, you have to put up the full amount plus interest of the judgment against you. You put that up in a bond that the court controls, and the court oversees that bank account with the money in it. And now you can file your appeal. And the reason that's done is so you lose your appeal, the person that's at the other end of this thing is guaranteed of getting her or his or their money. So he had to put up 91 million, I believe it was, to cover the 88.3 million that he owes E. Jean Carroll for that defamation of character suit. And she will get that money unless his appeal overturns that verdict.
Speaking of Carroll, Ms. Carroll, one of the things that I don't know how you solve this problem, because the judges in these various cases have said you cannot trash the folks who are filing these claims against you, whereas the judge, well, of course, the judge didn't file a complaint, but you can't say bad things about folks that are involved with your cases. Otherwise, I'll put you in contempt of court. Yet he continues to do it on a continual basis, you know, via X or his Truth Social or wherever else he does it. And I don't know, what can the judge do? I mean, because Trump is clearly.
You're right. So I know everybody's frustrated over it, but I saw a New York State lawyer yesterday say that next Tuesday there is a hearing in Judge Merchant's courtroom. They'll take a break from the trial to have a hearing about this issue, about the gag order and Trump allegedly repeatedly violating the gag order.
Right.
And there is a provision in New York State law that you have to have a period of like a week before you can have this hearing. So that's why the judge hasn't been able to do anything about it. The week doesn't begin till this coming Tuesday. So we're going to learn then. I mean, you would think that on Tuesday, he's going to get tough on Trump and he's going to do it incrementally. He's going to charge him money for each violation. The prosecutors say there were 7 violations yesterday and 3 the day before. So we're up to 10. And these are all what you said is correct. They're postings on Truth Social where he is violating the gag order by trashing the jury selection, the jury. He's not allowed to do that, not allowed to trash witnesses. He is allowed to trash the judge and the district attorney because they are elected public officials. And, you know, if you're going to run for office, you better have a thick skin. Yeah, you're going to get trashed, but you're not allowed. Trump is not allowed to trash their families, the judge's daughter, which he was doing. That's been stepped up now to stop Trump from doing that. But he's still trashing the jury, and there are going to be consequences. I saw this guy last night from Bloomberg, Tim O'Brien, who got sued by Trump years ago. and is the only guy to win a lawsuit from Trump on Trump's taxes. And he was able to get Trump's taxes years ago and see that Trump doesn't have anywhere near the amount of money that he claims he has, right? And so this guy, Tim O'Brien, he's on to Trump. And he said last night, he said, there's no way, no way we're going through this trial without Donald Trump spending some time in a jail cell. That he's going to misbehave in court. He's going to blow his top. The judge is going to lock him up to punish him. And under New York state law, the judge, for every infraction of a gag order, the judge can lock you up for 30 days. So I don't know that he'll do 30 days, but he might do a few hours and see if Trump will behave better. We'll see.
The problem is that, you know, Trump's doing this to further his campaign. I mean, I really believe that's why he's doing this in part. You know, he thinks that the more he trashes the people who are out to get him, the stronger support will become.
He may think that. First of all, he shouldn't even be thinking that way. He had to be worried about getting convicted and staying out of jail.
Right.
Because the judge is all powerful in our system. Once, if Trump is convicted, the judge and only the judge has the power to decide what's going to happen to Donald Trump. And he can immediately lock Trump up for years if he chooses to. And good luck getting out of that once you're in the can. And there's no phones. No, he can't be doing interviews from jail and campaigning. He's going to be in some dingy dump held as a convicted felon. And this is the guy that he holds his fate in his hands and he trashes them all the time. It makes no sense. And he did it in the E. Jean Carroll case. He was disrespectful of the judge in front of the jury. Jury goes out, comes back like 2 hours later, $83.3 million they hit Trump with, all because Trump can't control himself. And the same thing's going to happen here. I'm quite sure.
Yeah. And of course for his fan base,
they love it. They love it all.
They love it. I mean,
but they're not enough. They're not enough for them to win.
He's still getting very strong support no matter what though. It's amazing how that's happening.
Well, I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I really don't think he is. And I think we've got to look at the entire picture of Donald.
I'm thinking in terms of the Republican primary election, how that's
Totally. No, he's totally got the party. You're absolutely right. But if we look at the 8 years of Donald Trump as a presidential candidate and all the elections that have gone on, he won one election over Hillary Clinton basically because James Comey reopened the email investigation 12 days before the election. And Trump ends up winning in the Electoral College. Of course, he loses a popular vote by 2 million. 4 years later, he loses by 7 million. And every midterm election since he got elected president, the Republicans have lost and done badly. All of them, including 2022 when all of a sudden, we're supposed to have a red wave. And what happened? They didn't win 40 to 60 seats. They won 5 seats. And look at what's happened with them since then. The whole thing is falling apart. It's a pathetic show. And that's thanks to Donald Trump. And I don't think he's as strong nationally as people think. I think you're right, Bob. Among Republicans, yeah. And the Republicans are not as strong as they used to be. We lose every popular election. All of them. You know, so.
There is a speculation, and I'm not saying that it's true, but maybe you can clarify one way or the other. How are we going to put an end to this discussion about how the Democrats are allowing illegal migrants into this country and allowing them to vote just to reinforce the party?
Right. Well, they don't vote, but they are allowing them in. I mean,
there's talk they want to give them voting privileges.
Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, I don't know who's doing the talking. The Democrats certainly aren't saying that. And, you know, they're not American citizens. If you're not an American citizen, you can't vote in this country. So good luck. I mean, if they want to, I mean, Trump is trying to come up with some issue to stick on to Biden to hurt him. And so last Friday, a week ago Friday, he had Speaker Johnson down to Mar-a-Lago and they had a press conference. And originally it was supposed to be about a bill that they were going to put in Congress to stop just what you're saying, Bob, to stop illegals from being allowed to vote. But by the way, we haven't heard a word about that since. There is no bill because there are no illegals that are allowed to vote. It's a made up issue like migrant crime that Trump tried to make up. When in fact, even illegal migrants, they perform fewer crimes than Americans do in America.
The sad thing is, I don't know what the answer is. We talked about this before in prior shows. You know, President Biden sort of overturned a lot of the policies that President Trump put in place. And the result has been increased crossing of borders of immigrants illegally, right?
Correct. But both Trump and Biden, when they were president, each has complained of the same thing, which is they don't have the power that they want to patrol the border the way they want, to close the border when they want. And that was what this bipartisan bill 2.5 months ago was all about, that was about to pass the Senate when Trump said, no, I don't want the bill. Trump, not in office, says to the Republicans, don't pass that bill. So the bill died. Now, what you read now is that Biden is close to issuing executive orders to basically shut the border down, even though he does not believe they are legal, and he thinks the courts in the end will overturn these executive orders, but he's going to do it anyway to look tough on the border for the election. And then once the election's over, you know, Congress needs to get their act in gear and do a bipartisan deal to change the law to fix this whole immigration thing. It's just been allowed to languish.
Out of hand.
Out of hand. And it's been allowed by both parties.
Yeah.
For various reasons. And I always heard years ago that the Republicans were letting them in to be cheap labor and the Democrats were letting them in, not as you put it, Bob, to have them vote, but they'd let them in here and then let them become American citizens. And then, of course, they could vote. The thing you're mentioning, short circuits, the citizenship thing.
The irony.
I don't think that's going to happen.
The irony is, you know, to the extent that, you know, these immigrants do become citizens and do vote, Democrats aren't getting a large, you know, they're getting a large percentage than Republicans, but it's not that, you know, it's not that dramatic. I keep hearing polls that Latinos are very much worried about immigration and,
right,
and all that. So, you know, this idea that these immigrants are going to vote all Democratic is just it's nonsense.
It's nonsense. And then in the long run, it's nonsense because the people of Hispanic heritage who are here legally, every election, they're moving more towards the Republicans because A, they're American citizens. They don't sit there and say, well, I'm a Hispanic, I got to vote this way. No, they're regular taxpayers, parents, kids in school, whatever the issue is, it hits them the same as it hits everybody else. And plus, culturally, they're conservative. They're Catholic. They're devoutly Catholic. They don't like the liberalism of the Democratic Party. It's the same thing that over the years has happened to Irish and Italian Catholics who came 100 years ago. Their offspring, who are our age, they've moved to the Republican Party. A lot of it's over cultural issues. Vietnam and all sorts of stuff.
I think that is true, but I think it's less true of women than men. I think one of the things
is a
gender divide that's getting, every time I read about it, seems to be getting wider and wider. And I find that really interesting.
Well, it's called Dobbs.
Well, that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it. There's no question.
Yeah. And I can tell you right now, forget the polling. Because the polling there's one thing polling can't do. It can't figure out who is going to vote. It asks you, if you were to vote today, do you vote for Peter Altschul or Bob Branco? Okay. But it can't 6 months before an election, what it can't figure out is who's actually going to vote. And the thing about Dobbs and abortion and in vitro and all this stuff that's been happening is that women voters are so exercised over this. They're so angered. They're infuriated that they all vote and more of them vote than men vote. First of all, there are more women, 51-49 women over men just generally, but then it's disproportionate when they vote. There are more women who come out. They're more committed because of this issue. And this issue has been winning for the Democrats everywhere in the last 2 years. And even in the most red areas like Kansas and Ohio, you put abortion on the ballot, they all come out and vote, and the polling doesn't reflect the amount of voting that is going on. And this coming November, you've got the guy that brags, I got rid of Roe v. Wade. That's Trump, versus a totally pro-choice guy in Biden. And in almost every swing state, they have a referendum on the ballot to enshrine choice as in the Constitution of Florida has it, Arizona, Nevada. They're all having it on the ballot.
Are they doing it in Missouri?
Yeah,
I think so.
Well, Missouri's not a swing state, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Although, this year there's going to be states. I mean, Florida's not a swing state anymore. But if you told me that we wake up the day after the election and a Florida or a North Carolina or an Arizona for sure goes Democrat because of abortion, and Texas is another one. They've got it on the ballot. States that we've kind of got used to thinking are Republican. One or two of them is going to go Democrat this November, all because of abortion.
So, Congressman, I sent you an article this morning, and I probably should have sent it to you too, Bob, that talked about how we as U.S. citizens have less faith in institutions, especially governmental institutions, lowest faith confidence in those things in a long time. And I think abortion is in part a reaction to that. People don't want government telling us, how to run our lives in the bedroom, as it were. And in that particular sense, it's helping the Democrats, right? Nobody wants the government to tell us how to, deal with abortion. But what worries me is that this lack of confidence is impacting, I'm saying this badly, is supporting Trump, because people who are voting for Trump tend to have very little confidence in governmental institutions. And I was sort of curious about if you sort of see that same disconnect I do. And if you do, what do you do about it?
Well, by the way, okay, so the piece you sent me is based on Gallup polling and that they've noticed this trend increasing. And what you described is true. I have followed for at least 10 years, every year, a thing called the Edelman Trust Survey. And it's done by this PR firm that does polling, Edelman Associates, I think it is. And they do it worldwide in like 28 democracies or something. And year after year, trust in all the institutions, not just in government, in the military, in church, in the media, especially, all of them have plummeted. And that is one of the explanations for why authoritarianism has risen higher, because I guess people are beaten down, they don't trust, and they like the simple solution. I even heard people say it to me. Let's just have Trump run. And I counter and say, well, he can't run anything. He's incompetent. But that gets into a different issue, which is, and I'm not speaking for you, Bob, but Peter and I think share a view that Trump, the image of Trump to some people, is not the reality of Trump. The image is this big businessman is super successful. The reality is less. He's a fraud and a huckster and a braggart and all that. And the idea that he could run the, he can't run the government. He can't run it. Never, it never could. And he's run himself into bankruptcies over and over and over again. You want Jeff Bezos to run it? That's a different story. I mean, get some guy that really has done something entrepreneurial, and I can see it. But yeah, it does play into Trump's hand, no doubt.
It is a puzzle. If, before we turn the corner, I want to at least take a run at stuff that's going on around the world. You know, the military stuff. It's gotten much crazier since we talked last time, especially the Middle East. And of course, Ukraine and maybe China too, for all we know.
And Iran.
Well, yeah, yeah. Iran too. So give us your sort of overview of what's going on and what the U.S. should be doing about this. And by the way, what Congress should be doing about this, you know, all this money is that, you know, to fund Israel, to support Ukraine is may finally get released, maybe.
Well, I think it will. And of course, we're taping on Friday afternoon. Tomorrow on Saturday, the House of Representatives is going to vote on the aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, aid to Taiwan, and humanitarian aid for Gaza. And it's a $91 million package that the Senate already passed. And it's going to finally come onto the floor for votes. It'll all pass tomorrow. The Speaker of the House has undergone some sort of deathbed conversion where after being threatened by Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tom Massey and Paul Gosar that they're going to move to throw him out, he sort of said, screw it, I'm going to go ahead and pass this stuff. And he brought it up, got it done with the help of Democrats through the Rules Committee, and it's being voted on Saturday. By the time our show airs on Monday, it should be a done deal. And it's a huge change and a huge step by the United States, especially on Ukraine. Because we had an amazing thing happen last week that didn't get enough attention, which is the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, yeah, Mike Turner from Ohio, very good guy, goes on national television and says of his fellow Republicans in the House that a lot of them are now spreading Russian propaganda on the floor of Congress. Now, never in my life have I heard a member of a party accuse another member of his party of that. Yeah, you accuse the other party of it all the time. They're pro-Hanoi, pro-Fidel, pro-whatever. But that's politics. This isn't politics. This isn't the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, who's privy to everything, is aghast when he sees how the Russians have penetrated the Republican House conference. And he called them out on it. And that seemed to be the beginning of the dam bursting. And now you got the Speaker doing a complete 180 and saying, I've been getting briefed since I became Speaker. I've seen what's going on. And I'm a child of the 80s. And I follow the Ronald Reagan rules of peace through strength. And you got to stand up to these people. And boy, how refreshing to hear someone in the U.S. government invoking Ronald Reagan, probably the most successful president of our lifetimes, guys. And I never hear Trump invoking him. Never. But now I hear Speaker Johnson. I go, thank God sanity is back. They're going to pass the bill and it's going to save Ukraine. And it must be driving Putin crazy.
Well, you know, we talked about this before. I think the most strident pro-Putin folks are the conservative nationalist Christian folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
They seem to be in Putin's corner. Not all of them, of course, but you know, the folks like Margaret Taylor Greene and those people are, you know, proud nationalist Christians, Christian nationalists. And it is a genuine problem. You know, I hope that there are some people in the conservative Christian crowd who are saying, wait a minute, this ain't working. We need to, we need to stop this.
Is it right? Well, here's the thing. You're absolutely right. But I think right now we've got to get this foreign aid stuff done. And then we're in election season for the rest of the year. And the odds are, I think, that the Republicans will lose the House of Representatives. They've done a pathetic job running it. And with redistricting, and it's a big presidential year, blah, blah. The odds are Democrats retake control of the House. And believe it or not, for the Republicans, that'd be the best thing. Yeah. Because they need to clean their act up. We cannot be a Christian nationalist party and expect to win a popular support nationwide. Yeah, you'll win Dalton, Georgia, and some desert areas in Arizona where that guy Paul Gosar comes from. But the majority of people in this country are not a Christian nationalist. They might be Christians, but they're not Christian nationalists. I live up here, New York, huge Catholic population. They're not Christian nationalists.
No.
You know.
We have about 20 minutes left, and I did at some point want to invite our participants to take part in our discussion with New York Congressman, or I should say former New York Congressman, John LaBoutelier. He's with us today on In Perspective. So without further ado, let me ask Steve if there are any hands raised.
Yeah, first up, we've got area code 562. Go ahead, please.
Your name, please.
Hi. A statement and then a question. You're
Who
wrong
am I speaking
about...
to?
This is Regina.
Oh, Regina, go ahead, Regina.
The congressman. They are out here. We have so many left-wing liberals trying to pass it, a law, for them to vote the illegals. They already have licenses, though they're here illegally. They are also going to allow them, the illegals, to participate in these new home programs to buy a home. That just came up, not to mention the college funding. So when you say they won't be able to vote, they're working on it. I can't give you a name because I don't remember.
No, you're right. Yeah. I remember Jerry Brown when he was governor a few years ago in California. He advocated that in local community elections where illegals live in California, they should have some say in what goes on in their community. So you're right. All I said is they're not voting in America, and they're not going to vote in federal elections until they're citizens.
Well, we'll see. But the other thing was I wanted your spin on who you do like in office. Like for the Senate or or for president for that matter, who do you like?
Well, I mean, as a candidate running, I mean, we've got to.
Yeah, well, who do you think is Senate, Congress, president, who do you think is doing a good job right now?
Okay. I like a lot of the Republicans in the Senate, like Lankford. I think that guy did a very good job trying to negotiate that deal. John Thune from South Dakota, Mike Rounds from South Dakota. In the House, these chairmen, the one I mentioned, Mike Turner, and especially Mike McCall, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. I think those guys are great. I think they're the face of the Republican Party that I like, not these MAGA people who have a different worldview, which doesn't work.
Yeah.
And who are you going to vote for president, or do you want to say?
I'm going to vote for Biden. I can't vote for Trump.
Okay.
I can't possibly vote for Donald Trump. And it's like when I die and go to heaven and they ask me up there, what'd you do? I can't defend it. So I won't vote for him. So vote for Biden because it's the choice you have to make.
I just wish that somebody like Nikki Haley had gotten more traction than there in the primaries because I wouldn't have voted for her because I'm more left than you are, Congressman, but I really do admire her, and I think she'd make for such a much more uniting president than if she had won in whatever.
Well, she didn't win, but by the way, it's interesting. Since she dropped out after Super Tuesday, as far as I know, I haven't heard a word from her or seen her. She's deliberately hidden out, obviously, politically, and I'm worried to death that she is going to buckle under pressure and end up endorsing Trump. Because when I saw John Sununu, who was her biggest backer,
yeah, I saw that.
Obviously in New Hampshire, he did a complete 180. Bill Barr did a 180. A lot of these people think in order to stay viable in the Republican world, I have to support Trump. And so far she hasn't done it, but her history is not great. She reverses herself a lot. So.
I didn't think she'd get traction. Thank you, Regina. I appreciate the call. Who's next?
Next up is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. If President Biden is reelected, how do you see the economy going in a sense that I'm worried about the huge deficit, which both Republicans and Democrats are responsible for, and interest rates and inflation? And if Biden is reelected, What do you foresee for the economy?
Well, I mean, our economy is steadily improving and has been during his presidency. Whether it has to do with him and his policies or the natural business cycle after COVID coming back and gearing up. But compared to the other Western democracies and the biggest economies like China, we have by far the best economy in the world, but not even close. So, you know, who knows? But I mean, right now it's going pretty well. Low inflation, a high employment, low unemployment, pretty good interest rates. When I think back to the year from 1980, when I got elected and Reagan got elected that year and the misery index, we had double digit inflation, double digit unemployment. Huge interest rates. It was a disaster. Today's economy in America it's not perfect, and inflation, gas pump, food, too high, but better than it was a year ago, going in the right direction. Oh, and it's better than anywhere else in the world. All the other countries, people invest their money in America. All of them buying treasury bills, putting their money over here. It's the best economy.
Having said that, I think everything you're saying is true. I do worry about debt seem to be increasing. Social Security has got to be dealt with at some point. I mean, we've talked about this before. You know,
the whole national debt's got to be dealt with at some point. It's way too high.
Well, that's true, but neither party really ever does address it. Obama had a chance with the Simpson-Bowles Debt Reduction Commission. And he decided not to do it. He just threw it in the drawer and forgot about it. And so, you know, politically, these guys want to get themselves reelected. They don't want to cut anything. And then they believe, well, we can grow ourselves out of debt by having, now our economy is growing. We have the, you know, biggest economy in the world by far. And the debt isn't as big as the size of the GDP. So. You know, there is some argument that we can grow our way out of some of it, but we've got what, $35 trillion in debt. The interest payment on that, I believe it's either the second or third largest item in our budget every year, is writing out an interest payment of, I don't know, $1 trillion a year or something. It's amazing.
Yeah. And that can't work long term. It just can't.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know that when I was in grade school, I was already getting into the news, and I remember 1967, maybe LBJ was president. I'm 14, and he announces the federal budget will be just under $100 billion a year. And that was considered humongous. $100 billion federal budget, right? This year it's $4.5 trillion. That's the federal budget. The budget of New York State this year, $268 billion.
One state.
And that's just in New York State. So that in 50 plus years, we've gone from, now I know it's all not relative, but it is sort of. I mean, $100 billion for the federal budget. LBJ didn't want to get it to 100. He thought the number sounded so big. It would scare people.
You know, it's funny. We have a country that's $35 trillion in debt, and the people in charge make it sound like we can afford anything. Now the college students are going to have their loans forgiven, for example. How do you manage to straighten all that out if you're $35 trillion in the hole?
Well, the argument, I think, for forgiving the students, and I'm not arguing that in favor of it, is that debt that the students have taken is reducing the taxes that they collect because folks can't spend as much money. And they have fewer options as far as buying real estate. It's a real drag on the economy. And so that's the argument. The problem,
That's the economic argument.
That's the
political
argument.
The political argument. And politics always trumps economics during an election year. Is Biden is hurting among younger voters. And
that's
he thinks every one of these young people, and they're not young anymore necessarily, that I forgive their loan, I get a good shot at their vote and their spouse's vote and their parents' votes.
Yeah.
And we'll worry about the courts will overcome, you know, whatever the courts do to take that away won't happen until after the election.
How many other callers do we have or hands do we have raised?
We have two that have not spoken and one who has.
Well, let's get to the two that haven't spoken at least before we run out of time. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks,
so next up is Brian.
Good evening.
Hello, Brian.
Welcome. Brian, is that you? You are muted possibly. We may have to move on until he unmutes just to save time. Then we'll go back to him. Oh, there he is. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Okay, I had some questions for the congressman.
Well, let's do with one or two, you know, rather than more than that.
Okay, yeah, that's what I said, one or two. Okay, going about the immigration issue, okay? And there was something I read this past week, okay, about in the news, in Boston News, Brigham, which I get in my email. Now, this case, okay, was about a Brazilian man who crossed the border illegally in 2021, and finally I apprehended him, I believe this past week, for raping a child. He ended up as a resident in Lowell. I want to know, okay, based on this and based on these immigrants getting emergency shelter and all this, I want to know, okay, why isn't housing waiting list reform being done to address that our own homeless be taken care of first, in particularly, okay, the elderly and the disabled?
First of all, you're right. American citizens should be treated better off the top than anybody. However, everybody, whether they're here legally or not, should have at least a minimum level of care. We're America. We're not going to have these people, whether they crossed illegally or not. I don't want them freezing on the street in the winter. I don't want it. It's not right. I don't like seeing homeless people freezing on the street. And in New York City, they now do pick them up on terribly cold nights and put them in shelters, whether they want to go or not. Used to be you weren't allowed to do that. The court have stepped in and stopped the involuntary incarceration of homeless people in mental institutions because most of them are either addicted or mentally ill. That's a terrible problem. It's a separate problem from illegal immigrants. And as I said earlier in the show, and we could do this on another show too, there was a bill in the Senate that would have changed the entire immigration thing from top to bottom. And it was being negotiated by the Democrats and Republicans, and Trump killed the bill. And if that bill had passed, it would already be different. but they didn't, they wouldn't let it happen. So
it is an amazing thing. Let's thank you so much, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Who is our next caller? Jane.
And we've got two now who have not spoken. Next is Gene.
Jane or Gene?
It's Gene.
Gene.
Hi. So a comment first. I think you're right about Nikki Haley, because when she dropped out of the race and somebody asked her if she was going to support Trump, she basically said, I'm going to support the Republican candidate. So,
wow.
Yeah. And my question is, I watch News Nation a lot, and so I listen to Chris Cuomo, and sometimes he drives me up the wall. But he's been saying for weeks that he thinks that Biden should close the border. And, you know, obviously it is going to get taken to court. But do you think he's waiting because he doesn't want it to go to court before his election?
Well, I think that's part of it. And he was originally thinking of doing it right before the State of the Union address, but decided not to. I think it's a good move that he didn't. The State of the Union address is the day that this campaign turned around. And ever since then, Biden, in every polling metric, has been going up. Now, not a lot, but bit by bit, he's going, and Trump is staying where he was. He's not going down, but he's not going up. And Biden has the momentum. And this, when he does this immigration thing, if he does it, the executive orders to close the border, going to get a lot of headlines. A lot of people will like it, but there are going to be other people who don't like it. They're going to be Hispanic groups aren't going to like it. Left-wing groups aren't going to like it. And Biden doesn't want to tick them off too much and have them defect, for instance, to Bobby Kennedy Jr. So he's got to balance. Can I keep what I have and get more voters by doing this thing? And, you know, he was going to do it 6 weeks ago. He hasn't done it. So
yeah.
I don't know when he's going to do it.
Speaking of Bobby Kennedy, do you think he's going to hurt Biden or Trump more?
Yeah, I don't know. You hear both theories. I mean, his issues that he promotes, it you would think actually would hurt Trump.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And in the end, I'm not sure he'll be that big a factor. There's something wrong with him. I went to college with him. I didn't really know him very well. I knew him a little bit. Yes, the speech. He can't speak. Well, yesterday I saw his sister on TV endorsing Biden in Philadelphia.
She's
now talking like him with this halting speech that we normally associate with a 95-year-old. You know, where they really can't speak as well. But Bobby is 70 and Carrie Kennedy, his sister, 68. And she has deteriorated. She had a hard time speaking.
Well, I know he has some throat condition. He talked about it one night. And I wonder if she has the same thing.
Well, could be. Take it more neurological, but I don't
whatever,
know.
Whatever.
I think we need to be careful because a lot of people are criticizing Biden for his speech. And the guys
are.
But he stammers. He's had a stutter.
Kennedy may have something similar that he can't control fully. I just don't know what's causing his speech issues. And I'm hesitant to criticize that until I have a better sense of what's going on with him. I'm not going to deal with the guy anyway, but you know what I'm saying.
He is awfully hard to listen to. He really is.
Well, leaving out how he speaks, forget that. It's what he says. And he's into all the conspiracy theories, anti-vax. I would think that takes more votes away from Trump than it does from Biden, but who knows?
Thank you, Gene.
Okay, take care.
Well, we can time for one more.
Okay, area code 575.
And who would that be?
Yes, it is. It's Beth from New Mexico.
I recognize your voice.
The same thing is happening here that is happening in California. And a lot of even Hispanics from here and Hispanics that have become citizens don't like the illegals coming in. I know I'm a woman and I'm not going to vote for Biden because I don't like the left liberalism. And a lot of the people here don't. I don't know if all. I wish we had more than two choices. I wish we had
we have three.
A third party. They used to have.
Well, you might have five. I mean, depending on what state you're in, you've got Kennedy, you've got Cornel West, you've got Jill Stein running on the Green Party. Some states still have a Libertarian Party. But I don't know, when you vote for those people, is it a waste of your vote? You know, I don't know.
Not really. Recept 16.
That's kind of what I wondered.
I mean, in the end, I think
we would have at least three.
But you know what? The real the choice was, if you don't like Trump or Biden, is to beat them when they're running for their party's nomination. That's the time to get better choices. And what ended up happening is, obviously, they easily got renominated by their two parties. And so that's where a majority of the voters want this choice. People can say they're unhappy about it, but the results tell us.
I don't mind yeah. Trump as much as I don't really care for Biden at all.
We are out of time, unfortunately.
You are
out of
time.
Our time is up.
Thank you
as always. Congressman, again, thanks for taking the time. It was a fascinating hour. You always provide us with a lot of knowledge for us to think about where this country and this world are concerned. And, you know, we'll definitely have you back in a couple of months to update us.
I think we're already booked.
Yeah, we are twice. Once in June, once in August. So we look
can't
forward
wait.
To those times.
And then we should book you in October, right before the election or right afterwards. You know,
we'll definitely do that for sure.
Yeah, yeah,
thanks everybody.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Peter.
Anytime. Thanks. We look forward to next week's program. We have an author talking about identity theft, which is another problem we have in this country. We'll kick that around. Peter, thank you. Thanks, Steve and Herbie and all of our participants. And, of course, Congressman John Leboutillier. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. Take care, everybody.